Okay. Let's start. If they join, they join. If not, not. Okay. So, trick question. Who is the silver medal winner for wives in Gracious? Who had the second most wives? You know who had the most wives? Yaakov. Who had the second most wives? Avram? Two. Esav comes in second place. Three wives. Two in the beginning of the parsha, and one in the end. Three wives. Trying to compete with his brother. A lot of daughters-in-law for Yitzchak to deal with. Imagine that household. Thanksgiving time. Okay. In any event, why do we care? We don't really care about women of non-chosen people in Gracious. We care about their genealogy, we care about their kingdoms. This is a stylistic way of describing, well, they lived, they built kingdoms, that in general, and then we had this with Yishmael and the end of Chayisar, now let's get on with Yitzchak's life. And with Esav and the end of Vayishlach, his genealogy, his chieftains, his generals, now let's get on, come. Now let's get on with Yaakov's life. So we have a stylistic way for the Torah to wash away people who aren't part of the continuing narrative, but not their wives. So Esav married, but why are his wives so prominently featured? So in some strange way, the wives and their experiences help us better frame the whole selection, because the brachos, welcome, the brachos, what's your name? Yeah, welcome, Yaakov. So we're talking about Esav's wives, his three wives. So the selection of Yitzchak selecting Yaakov is selecting Am Yisrael, who's going to be not just the Am HaNivchar, because being the Bechor is not just reward and luxury and privilege, it's also responsibility, messages that we reflect. What are the messages the Jewish people reflect? That's why we're chosen. We're chosen to bear witness, to spread ideas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Yaakov has to be chosen in order to convey these messages. And Hashem has to engineer Yaakov's selection. And Esav is deselected, not just by whim and caprice, but because somehow isn't able to bear these messages. So what do we know about Esav's wives and why is it important? So we know two things about the wives. First of all, we know their genealogy. They came from Canaan. And I think so much of our focus, and Barsh has told us, is about the selection of Esav from Yitzchak. Yaakov from Esav. But there's a broader drama happening, the selection of Am Yisrael in their land from the local residents. And you have to keep your eye on the ball. There are two dramas unfolding. One is internally, which child will be chosen. One is this continuing process of trying to settle Eretz Yisrael and warrant our placement in a land that other people are living, because the people who are living there have traits that just aren't consistent with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's land and the messages that are so relevant to this land. So these two wives are Canaanites. The final wife in the end of Parshas told us she's the daughter of Yishmael, Machlas. But the first two wives, Yehudis, interesting name, first person to be called a Jew, Yehudis, Esav's first wife. So one wife's name is Yehudis, one wife's name is Basmas, but they're both Chitim. Where did we see Chitim before? Who are these Chitim that they're not daughters of, but they belong to? B'nei Chais. So these are the people who had struggled with Yitzchak's father, Avram, resisting, not really delivering land. Avram has to negotiate with them over the land. So this is the return of B'nei Chais. These are the daughters of Elon HaChiti and Be'eri HaChiti. So these are now the delegates of Canaan. They're in Parshas Toldos because Toldos is not just about Yaakov and Esav, but it's also about the family of Avram trying to select out this land and secure it from the local inhabitants, the Chitim. And that happened in Chayasara, when Avram purchased the land. Now it's happening again because Esav has aligned himself with Benos Canaan. Esav has aligned himself with daughters that are Chitim rather than internal, as he does in the end of the Parsha, Yishmael's daughter. Now, what do we know about these daughters? So Rashi provides two bits of information about the daughters. Number one, they sacrificed to Avodah Zarah. According to one position in Rashi, that's why Yitzchak's eyes were dim, because of all the smoke. It's a very smoky house, because there's a lot of voodoo, a lot of witchcraft, a lot of sacrifice, a lot of paganism. So they still are lodged within that world of paganism, of black magic, of sacrifices. And Yitzchak and now ultimately Yaakov, are trying to build a world of monotheism, a world of ration, a world without voodoo, a world without smoky sacrifices to pagan gods. And Esav has aligned himself with that world. So the selection away from Esav and away from Ben Askenaz is a selection about monotheism. But also, how does Rivka have Esav's clothing? Why, of all people, does Rivka have Esav's clothing? How could she, anyone know what Rashi says? Okay. So she says, let me find the Rashi. Vatikach Rivka as Bigdei Esav Bina Gadol HaChamudos. So Rashi says, because Esav was afraid that his wives would steal his clothing. So he asked his mother to safeguard the clothing. So Rivka was Esav's Shomer Chinam. She was watching the clothing on behalf of Esav. So first of all, something in this Rashi teaches us about complex relationships. You think that Rivka and Esav aren't on speaking terms, because Rivka is always conspiring against Esav. She knows who Esav is. He's a little embarrassed to face his mother because he got the whole world fooled, including his blind father. But that one person who knows who you really are, it's hard to look him in the eye because they see right through you. They see right through the trap. So you think that Esav and Rivka don't have a relationship. The answer is life is not black and white. Life isn't binary. Life isn't either you have a relationship or you don't. Rivka still cares for Esav. Esav still trusts his mother, certainly more than his wives. And at the end of the Parsha, Rivka is sincere when she says, I can't imagine my two children dying on one day, and she still views Esav as a child. So in our role as parents and friends and children, it isn't black or white. We either love someone or we detest someone. A lot of gray in the middle. But ultimately, this is the second part of her daughter-in-law's profiles. Number one, they're part of paganism. Number two, you can't trust them. They're going to steal the clothing. So Esav has to plead with his mom, please safeguard my clothing so my wives don't steal them. Namely, they're engrossed in the world of paganism and they're engrossed in the world of immorality, of moral confusion, of theft, of stealing. These are the two messages that we are expected to bear to humanity, monotheism and morality. We're meant to stand for HaKadosh Baruch Hu as being an unknowable, non-physical God that we don't sacrifice smoky voodoo korbanos to. And second of all, that we're moral people. And Esav has aligned himself with the people of Canaan, so this selection of Yaakov from Esav and the continuing selection of Am Yisrael from the locals is pitched, according to Rashi, within a particular frame, namely the frame of morality and monotheism, which makes all the more interesting to hear Rashi's editorial polemic. Rashi writes a parish on the Chumash. This is a shiur on Rashi. Every once in a while, Rashi has a little polemic, a little op-ed. This is Rashi's op-ed. It's thrust in the middle of nowhere, because remember, Rashi lives in France in the 11th century. It's a very difficult time to live in France. You're experiencing crusades, you're experiencing pogroms, and the main clash, as opposed to our current clash between Yitzchak and Yishmael, the main clash for Rashi in France is between Yaakov and Esav. So Parshas Toldos resonates with Rashi. Parshas Vayera resonates very deeply with us, because Kibi Yitzchak, Yikar L'Chazara, Yitzchak and Yishmael were trying to build our land and were struggling with B'nai Yishmael. But for Rashi in the 11th century, Toldos is Toldos, Vayetze, Vayishlach, these are the Parshios that speak to his setting. So Rashi, in the beginning of the section of Brachos, comes up with a very interesting polemic. It doesn't appear in the Chumash. He says, Esav haya nimsha l'chazir. Esav was like a pig. Quotes a pasuk in Tehillim. Why is Esav like a pig of all animals? So, of course, Christians ate pig, Jews did not. That was a main bone of contention. Excuse the pun. But why is he called a pig? Because a pig has one sign of kashrus. What's the one sign of kashrus? Split hooves. It's visible. What sign of kashrus does it not possess? Chewing the cud. That's invisible. So there's a projection. Everyone, look at me. Look how kosher I am, the pig says. When internally it's not really kosher. Namely, the pig is guilty of hypocrisy. And Rashi thrusts this on the descendants of Esav. And I'll tell you with the hypocrisy that he accuses Esav of. He says, what was Esav's hypocrisy? What was Esav's pig-like hypocrisy? Showing the world one thing and being something else. He says, listen, Kach Elu, these Esav people, Gozlim the Chomsim, they steal and they cheat and they rob Umarim Atzmam Ksherim. Now, we have no record of Esav stealing. We have no race. In fact, he's probably sensitive to it because his wives were thieves. So he was very, very careful. He may have been violent. He may have been aggressive. When he comes in and he wants the food, he doesn't grab it from Yaakov. He doesn't steal it. He could have very easily beaten Yaakov up, stuck him in a janitor's closet, and finished off the shakshuka. And yet he pleads with him, and he makes an exchange. It's all very legal, and it's a sale. So Esav has his flaws, let's face it. So where's Rashi getting this from? It's not Esav, it's Edom. And Rashi's living through pogroms, who rampage, who steal, who cheat, and then they claim to be moral, because this is the great period of Jewish, of Judaism on trial. You're not the son of God anymore, you're not selected, you're immoral, you're the children of Satan, we're the moral people. So Rashi isn't accusing Esav, I mean, he's choosing Esav because Esav's the poster boy for Edom, Esav's the Gzedi of Edom. But he's delivering a polemic that fits more in the 11th century than it fits 3,700 years ago in the particular context of Yaakov and Esav. And of course, how does Esav at least exhibit some of these tendencies? He didn't steal, he didn't cheat, because he gets married at the age of 40. Why is 40 so iconic for Esav's marriage? Because his father got married at 40. Yitzchak was 40 when he gets married. So he wanted to make believe he was his father. And just like my father, he spent this whole time, Rashi accuses him of raping, and this we can sense, a person in the field, a person that didn't have a marriage, didn't have a home, wasn't in the old time, Yoshe Baholim, and he was spending his whole life living frivolous and promiscuous. Then he's 40, all of a sudden becomes a virgin. All of a sudden, I want to be like my father, and I want to marry, and I want to start a home. Okay, it's slight hypocrisy. It's not like, I mean, many people live loose lives or undirected lives, and they grow up and they have more direction in their life. He's not stealing anyone. He's not cheating. He's maybe Kinevis Das. All of a sudden, you thought of him one way, and now he marries at the age of 40, and everyone thinks he's so sacred and so holy. Okay, but it's not stealing and cheating. But Rashi's really projecting this hypocrisy upon B'nai Esav, and it's an appropriate hypocrisy because, again, this is selection, and we are selected for these two messages, moral compass and theological clarity. And Esav's wives don't exhibit either. And Esav himself now is accused of that hypocrisy of stealing and cheating, even though he never stole and cheated, at least in the Parsha, because his descendants will. Which makes Yitzchak's request for the preparation of his food all the more fascinating. Because Yitzchak is always asking him, he's saying, Tzei ha-sadeh v'tzuda li tzayid, v'asei li matamin. So the two psukim that Yitzchak conveys to Esav are both psukim qualified by the word li. Why is li so important? So Rashi says, again, this appears in some Rashi, doesn't appear in other Rashi, but one Rashi, tzuda li min ha-hefker, v'lo min ha-gezel. He's insistent with Esav, I don't want this to be stolen food, I don't want this to be stolen. Latzud tzayid l'havi. If you don't find anything, just don't bring lo yavi min ha-gezel, two Rashis. So why is gezel so prominent here? So part of it is contextual, because Yitzchak had just fended off the Plishtim who accused him of stealing water. Remember, Avram never faces those accusations. Yaakov never faces accusations of theft. They struggle, there are issues, but they never face the accusation. Yaakov faces Laban, but Laban, it's hard to take him seriously. But here the Plishtim have legitimate concerns. These are our water rights. I mean, the Plishtim, this is natural conflict. Avram runs away from the conflict. Second he senses a conflict with Lot, you go left, I go right, there's enough space. But Yitzchak is trying to consistently build these wells without any argument, and they call him Eshek, and Sitna, you're a thief, you're stealing, and then finally he builds this well that no one complains about, and he calls it Rehovah, because now I have the breath and the space not to be accused of a thief. So Yitzchak is living this moral challenge that's at the heart of the selection. He's trying not just to prove his own morality, but to prove the morality in face of the Canaanim, who are morally corrupt, who are challenging him about theft. So he wants to make sure that these brachos are squeaky clean. He wants to make sure that these brachos are delivered in a manner that avoids all suspicion of theft. So he says, tzu dali. He doesn't want to be the hypocrite that Rashi accuses Esav's descendants of being, but also he wants to assure that this whole process unfolds properly. So there's a lot behind the scenes and under the surface. Esav's wives, their involvement in the world of voodoo, black magic, they were thieves. Esav was worried. He asks his mother, according to Rashi, to safeguard his clothing. Esav, by aligning with the people of Canaan, has thrown his lot with the immoral paganists. That's why he's deselected. That's why Benos Canaan, the people of Canaan, are deselected in their land, is transferred to Am Yisrael. Yitzchak wants to make sure that this process of delivering brachos is squeaky clean of any hint or any trace of theft. So he demands tzudali. I'll just mention one more Rashi, because it's really important morally. How did Yitzchak start suspecting, this is really Yaakov, not Esav, by his speech? Now the famous Rashi is, what about Yaakov's speech tipped Yitzchak off? He mentions Hashem, Ki Yikra Hashem. He mentions HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But there's another Rashi. He hears Kol Yaakov. Kol Kol Yaakov Hayadayim Yedaisa. That's become an iconic phrase. Kol Yaakov. Svarim Evanid Kol Yaakov. We're named. Our weapons are our call. Our tefillah, our davening, our Torah. But if you look in Rashi, what was about Kol Yaakov that Yitzchak had heard him learning Gemara? Oh, that must be Yaakov because he's the one that learns Gemara, not Esav, who's always hunting. It was something that Yaakov said that Esav never said. Shemidaber b'lashon tachnunim. Yaakov said the word please. He said kumna, please Abba. Aval Esav b'li kunturia. When Esav walks in the room, he doesn't say the word please. He says Yaakov Avi, get up, your food is here. Yaakov says please. So it's important to say please in life. But what's fascinating is. But Esav also says please, doesn't he? Who knows the Parsha well? Who's Marvi Sedra? When Esav walks into the room and he's hungry, in the restaurant, what does he say? Haliteni na min adam adam hazeh. So Esav also says please. Isn't it fair of Rashi to accuse Esav of not using the word please? To be honest, you have to be fair. The answer is as follows. It's easy to say please when you need something from someone. You want to be endearing. You're not holding the cards. You're in a position of inferiority. Yaakov's got the food, he's starving. Please, Yaakov. But when you're in a position of superiority, when you're controlling the events, then you can bark sometimes, you can command, you can butt in conversations. That's the real test. Esav, in the beginning of the Parsha, he needs food from Yaakov, so of course he's going to say please, or else he won't get your food. It's easy to say, can I please have some food? Can you please help me? What about when you're the parent? What about when you're the Rebbe? What about when you're the older person? What about when you have control of a situation, then you tend to speak less softly, you tend to speak more authoritatively, you tend to butt in, interrupt people. You never interrupt your Rosh Hashiva, but you'd interrupt your younger sibling, you'd interrupt, because after all, what I have is important to say. That's the real test of character. Can you speak softly and politely, not just when you need something from someone? I know people who speak very politely when they want something from someone. When they don't, not so much. Doesn't always work. So it's important to sense Esav says please when he needs some food. Yaakov says please when he's got the food. He says, Abba, please, here's some. And Esav walks in and says, Abba, here's the food, time to eat. Okay, so interesting Rashi's about Esav's wives, about their involvement in the world of witchcraft and immoral theft, about this polemic against Esav. Yitzchak is very careful to structure the Akedah. I said the Akedah because it's his Akedah. That's why he's so concerned about the knife, but it's really the brachos. He structures the brachos in a way that's squeaky clean. And finally, he senses Yaakov, not just because he mentions HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, but he senses Kol Yaakov just because he speaks politely, even when he doesn't have to, in order to achieve his ends. Okay? Welcome. Chodesh Tov, everyone.